This is the PR Podcast, a show about how public relations helps you tell your story to the world. We talk with great PR practitioners who have the skills, creativity, and just plain savvy to get their clients noticed. Now here's your host, Jody Fisher.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the PR Podcast. I'm Jody Fisher. Thanks for joining us. Well, you haven't sent in your PR podcast plug yet, have you? That's right. I'm looking at you. There's only been a few people who have sent in their PR podcast plug, and this is an amazing opportunity for PR people who, like I say, are great at promoting our clients and terrible at promoting ourselves. You got to plug yourself a little bit, and we want to give you a little bit of love. So we want to know about your cool newsletter. We want to know about your amazing TikTok dance. We want to know about your hidden talent. We want to know about the award that you just won, or maybe the cool client you just scored. I mean, it can be virtually anything. Send us that PR podcast plug. We want to let people know what you're doing in our community and mention you at the top of an upcoming social. Reach out on one of the socials or send me an email directly at jody@jodyfisherpr.com, and we will plug you at the top of an upcoming show. Now on with our show and our terrific guest for today. Caitlin Barclay is co-founder and CEO of Scout Lab, with clients that include Wix.com, Adidas, Venmo, and she's helped to scale startups like Ritual, Maple, and more. Prior to Scout Lab, Caitlin was on the founding team of FitMob, which is a fitness subscription, which sold to ClassPass in 2015, and she led global acquisition marketing at Levi Strauss. She's an advisor to female-run organizations like Supermush and Journey One Ventures, as well as an angel investor in women and BIPOC-led companies like Hey Jane, Quinn, Snaptrude, and Workstream. She volunteers with Do the Work, that's work with a E-R-Q, an organization with a mission to increase queer creativity and share a voice in the advertising industry, and is spearheading the first census for LGBTQ plus marketers and advertisers. She's also, as though she's got more time on her hands, been recognized as a Forbes Next 1000 and Adweek's 2022 Pride Stars, and her writing has been featured in McSweeney's Glamour and Fast Company. Caitlin, I'm going to take a breath and welcome you to the PR podcast.
Oh my God, I'd love you to do my introduction for every call I'm on henceforth.
We'll record it. You can just play it back.
100%.
Before we get into our conversation, how do you find the time to do all that stuff?
Oh, ruthless prioritization and a lot of caffeine. I don't sleep enough, but we'll get there eventually.
None of us do, right? Right. Yeah. This is the life that we chose.
Exactly.
Well, tell us about your work with Scout Lab, and then we'll get into some of the other things you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So Scout Lab, we're a creative communications agency. We focus on purpose-driven marketing, and that has evolved into specializing in the industries known as human and planetary health. We started in 2016, really galvanized by the election cycle we went through. My co-founder and I were historically in the tech space. So I sold my company in 2015 to ClassPass. My co-founder was one of the first brand hires at Airbnb, scaled them all over the world, APAC, EMEA, has some like great cocktail stories about why brand books matter, but I won't get into that. And we really came together, both had just moved to New York serendipitously after the 2016 election, was like, how do we use our superpowers for good? And that was really how Scout Lab was born. Because we had a background in technology, we created service offerings that served that community first and foremost, and then started to expand. And I think that the world of PR and communications was going through, let's call it like a rebrand, right? I think that it's so easy to blame a lot of our organizational problems or our problems with marketing on our PR agency. And so with that knowledge, we kind of reinvented a communications program that served the tech community in really agile ways. And since that, you know, that kind of moment, 2016, 2017, really expanded quite a bit. But yeah, really focus on serving the tech community and human and planetary health.
Really, really important work. And, in the last 5 years or so, let's just put it that way, the world has become awfully polarized. And there's a lot of, my opinion here, a lot of people out there who want to do a lot of harm to a lot of other people that they really just don't like because they don't like them. And it doesn't make any sense to me. But tell me about how you, as you put it, use your superpowers for good, to tell the stories of some of the organizations you get involved in. I take it that you really invest in companies, and I don't mean financially invest, but sort of work invest and get into relationships with companies that have a do good kind of a feel about them.
Yeah, definitely. I would say with the caveat that a lot of our biggest problems are not, it shouldn't be bipartisan, right? When we talk about food scarcity or food innovation, we need to be talking about a mass constituency, and it doesn't really matter if you voted for Biden or didn't. Hunger is a universal problem. And so what we do at Scout Lab is really first and foremost understand the audience that we're serving, the hopes, dreams, and desires, because I think historically we've observed, you know, multinational corporations create caricatures of their target consumer. And that's been, you know, ignorant at best, extremely harmful at worst. And so we take the approach of really understanding the person that we're selling to from a demographic, psychographic, sometimes firmographic point of view to inform marketing strategy. And that isn't always what's like, I guess, historically termed as like deeply progressive, right? Sometimes we need to talk to truckers in middle America because we are talking about resolving medical debt. And that is our do good, but we're not, it's not like kind of to the coastal progressive community that you associate that with, fortunately and unfortunately. So yeah, our work is, we like to say, like, certainly progressive, but sometimes we have to talk to kind of a more mainstream constituency or someone outside of our bubble, coastal bubble. And I think that's deeply important work and how we're actually going to instrument the change we hope to see in this world.
Yeah. And it's a great perspective. And, you know, I need to clarify that I think the politics of the last 5 years has made us think in terms of black and white and good and bad and right and wrong. And really the right and wrong, as you put it, you know, like, everybody needs to eat. It doesn't matter what flag you fly outside of your house. If you're hungry, you're hungry. That's a problem. We got to fix that. You've used the phrase in talking about campaign thinking and communications, how that you think about making the news versus pitching the news. What's the difference there, and how do you find that benefits Scout Lab and your clients?
Yeah, so my philosophy is that what makes the best brand marketers also make the best communication specialists. And that is to identify something, positioning an ethos that is tapped into the zeitgeist in some way with respect to whatever industry you're observing. And the only difference between a brand strategist and a communication specialist is the cycle of which you're creating that story. So brand specialists, you're creating, you know, for 5, 10 years, you know, in perpetuity. And the communication specialist is operating on a news cycle. And so what we do at Scout Lab with respect to communications and campaign thinking is, what is the cultural conversation we're trying to participate in, and how might we make the news or have a journalist think that whatever we've created is so culturally relevant, so tapped into the zeitgeist, that they want to write about it, versus us pitching a story. A fundraising announcement can always be like amplified and extended a number of different ways strategically, but how can we create a story or a larger, more integrated campaign that really exemplifies your brand values, what you stand for, not only who you're for, but who you're against, in such a way that, again, it makes the news.
Yeah, that's a terrific perspective, because I feel like the more that I do PR, you know, it is about telling your clients stories. But we're in a space now where, you know, you've still got reporters who you're going to pitch a story to, and they're going to do their own independent reporting. But you've got some outlets that, for whatever the reason is, they're really just aggregating the content that's sent to them, doing a light polish and republishing. So we have sort of become content creators ourselves more than we ever have. And I've always thought of myself as a content creator. Do you think of yourself that way as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that content creators, certainly, I also want to make sure that I'm serving as a mirror to my clients. So it's, you know, I was just having a conversation with another person in our field. And so often the client wants to tell the aspirational story versus the authentic story. And I think somewhere in between is actually our work, where it's like, what is true and authentic? What are you actually doing? And how does that perhaps indicate the first foot forward, or first, you know, couple steps forward into that larger future? And I think that is very challenging and complex, but the most authentic, and certainly the most supportive to the journalists that we, you know, co-create these stories with.
Yeah, authenticity is probably the number one quality of the stories that we pitch and the people that we work with and the clients that we work with. Mm-hmm. And sounds like you really align yourself with those, especially align yourself with the people who have those authentic stories to tell.
Yeah, certainly. You know, we do our best to, we take somewhat of a like democratic approach to onboarding clients, because, you know, our focus is human and planetary health, but that doesn't mean that we're sometimes picking between the lesser of two evils, because we are trying to create structural change in the healthcare system. Sometimes the solutions that we have to advocate for aren't perfect. In fact, most of them aren't. And same for planetary health. And so we do our best to make sure that the organizations that we're working with, not do our best to, we require it, are impacting in the world in a net positive way. And we make sure that, you know, our team is on board with that. It's often a part of the way that we think about hiring our clients as much as they're hiring us.
It's great perspective. At the same time that we want to align ourselves with great clients doing great work, we're also running businesses. Yes. And sometimes you have to say no for business reasons. How do you navigate that space where you really want to work with somebody, but for whatever reason, from a business perspective, it's not happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're only as good as your team. And if your team is stressed and burnt out, then you can't do the large visionary work that we all hope and aspire to do. So I think it's like always a resourcing conversation, right? It's like we evaluate, is the client vision and business model in line with our mission to build brands that advance humanity forward? Is the team we're working with culturally aligned with us? Because I think that relationship requires so much trust and empathy to co-create something bigger than ourselves. And then are we resourced appropriately internally? You know, we have the best clients. We work across so many incredible, purposeful mediums, but we have to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves so that we can wake up every day and do our best work. And so there, you know, very recently, I've had to say no to some really cool opportunities because it just didn't make sense for our business, the way that we're resourced. I've had to say no to big, big checks because at the end of the day, we just didn't believe that there was a net positive impact from that organization that wanted to hire us. So yeah, it is a balance for sure.
Are some of those lessons things that you learned from your mom? You said that your mother ran a small business. What did you learn from her, and what do you practice in your day to day?
Yeah, I've learned so much. So she, you know, if you can see it, you can be it. I think representation in this conversation of who is visible in leadership roles is so important. And I had the distinct opportunity to have a mom, as she was going through her first divorce from my father, really pivoted. She was pivoted into a career as an interior designer. And so as I was growing up, I watched her grow this small interior design business. So I always had a model of what an entrepreneur could be. And it was one that was a woman, which is not the case with the majority of my friends who are entrepreneurs. Or the majority of my friends who are not entrepreneurs. I think I also saw her talk about invoicing, and I talk I saw her struggle with making ends meet, and I saw her thrive when she won awards, and I saw her, you know, piece by piece, hire her first employee. And I think that was really important to me because all of those struggles are so a part of the entrepreneurial journey that I not only had a frame of reference of what I could be as an entrepreneur because I was raised by one, but also as I was becoming an entrepreneur, I didn't self-doubt as much because I know that, you know, some of these struggles I already have a frame of reference for. Whereas I find that a lot of my friends, a lot of my female friends struggle with like, oh, are these issues about me? Or is this a personal thing? Or is this like my very special problem? And entrepreneurialism is really, 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 really hard. And if you go into that not knowing that, I think there can be a lot of attrition, or you can like give up too quickly because you think that you're just not built for it because you have these problems. When I was able to have a little bit more resiliency because of what I observed with my mother. So I really credit her for how I've been able to kind of endure and grow and thrive as a business owner, because she gave me that frame of reference. And then, you know, as I was starting Scout Lab, was endlessly supportive, which I also think is a rarity, unfortunately, because it takes a lot of risk and sacrifice to build something. And I had a role model as a mom really support me every step of the way. So I credit her with all of my success.
That's great. That's great. You're very, very lucky in it. And it sounds like it served you well. Do we still have issues with representation in our industry? I mean, I know that probably 2/3 to 3/4 of the guests that we interview on the show are women, whether they're business owners or they're working in the industry. But we still have representation issues. Give us some thoughts on that. And also not just female representation, but LGBTQ+ representation.
Yeah. So certainly representation is still an issue. You know, less than 10% of agencies are run by women. And then as you start to insert intersectional identities, racial, gender expression, age, that gets smaller and smaller. So absolutely at the agency leadership level or ownership level. And then when I think you get into the agency leadership level, it's still deeply problematic. I was just at Cannes, and if you look at the CEOs of every major holding company, they're all white men. And I think that there have been organizations that have made great strides in elevating, you know, people that have historically not been represented in leadership positions, but certainly, and you can just like look at the numbers, we still have a long way to go. And I think I would just have this conversation internally. We need to make sure that we're elevating these underrepresented communities, but not asking them to shoulder the weight of representing that entire identity. So what I mean by that is, just because I am a queer woman does not mean I represent the entire queer community. Does not mean I represent every character of LGBTQIA. And I think that is the work of the marketer or the communication specialist to really diligence themselves and the audience that they're either representing or trying to speak to more authentically speak to that community, and not over-rotate on having the one queer person on the leadership team have to do that work solely. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I work with lots of clients, and I think we all probably work with lots of clients or run into lots of people. I mean, DEI is another, you know, hot issue right now. And it's important to have true diversity, equity, inclusion in businesses and in organizations. But I still find that we're stuck on window dressing DEI. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, you know, get the African-American person and put them in charge of, you know, the DEI program, and woohoo, we're diverse. And that's not it. That's not it at all. And so I'm with you when you say that we have a lot of ways to go for true diversity, equity, inclusion, for true representation, and to not think, as you really wisely put it, think that one queer person or one African American person or one Asian person or whoever represents everybody. That's not how it works.
Yeah, and I think we have to also understand that while, you know, you and I have the great benefit of living in the best city in the world, the majority of American companies don't have any diversity or inclusion goals, right? I think like 3/4 of American companies do not have DEIB goals. And I think the companies that do have DEIB goals view them as a way to mitigate legal compliance and reputational risks, not as important work to do at a socio-political or socioeconomic level. So we have a lot of work to do. I think it will continue to be important, but certainly so to your question, representation is important and an issue.
And it drives into what we started the conversation on, which is what you do with Scout Lab, is sort of being purpose-driven. And making sure that you're aligning with people who are in agencies and organizations that are doing good work, that are having true impact, and that are really, you know, for lack of a better phrase, making a difference. Where do you see this going now? You know, rest of 2023 into 2024. Not to be political, but we do have an election cycle coming up. You know, and so all of these issues are going to be talked about, I think, in a really pointed way, especially in the political environment we're in right now. You know, how do you drive this forward? Do you help drive this forward with you and the people you work with?
Yeah. So for us, I guess I'll talk a little bit about how we're working with our clients to prepare for that. You have to stand for something or you go out of business. And I think it's more and more important that brands understand, again, who they're for as much as who they're against. You have to understand who your enemy is. And it can be, again, like a person, a philosophy, a status quo, but you have to know what your brand is against in order to be magnetic in attracting who you ultimately want to attract. Private organizations are so core to protecting a lot of these marginalized communities that are being less and less supported at the federal level. And I think in 2023, you really have to put a stake in the ground. Like this, the rainbow washing and the pink washing and the green washing, it is so transparent and flimsy at this point. And so when you're going into an election cycle, I think what we're going to observe is brands who live by their values and brands who are, you know, lack of a better term, just flimsy in the way that they instruct their purpose or like what they're really here for. You know, we just saw the Supreme Court rulings on affirmative action, student loan, and the LGBTQ community, and that isn't going to go away. So I think it is important for brands to develop a really thoughtful long-term strategy about how they plan to support those in communities within their workforce and then externally should their, you know, business intersect or support or want to like acquire those communities. So I think that there's a tremendous amount of work to do. And I think it's the bold brands are going to be the ones that get ahead.
Great place to end the conversation on. And so much important work, like you said, remains to be done. And I think will always have to be done. And so that means that we have great people like you that are up for the task.
Knock on wood, here we are.
That's right. All right, Caitlin, thank you so much for this. We're going to segue now and have some fun into the rapid fire question portion of our podcast. This is where we steal a page from Inside the Actor's Studio. We ask our guests a series of rapid fire questions, get to know you a little bit better, but truly just meant to elicit a simple answer and maybe a laugh or two. Caitlin Barclay, with your indulgence, here we go. Rapid fire question number one. What is your favorite news source?
Adweek.
Oh, okay. I don't think we've had that one yet on the
really?
Show. Very good.
I just also like love the journalists over there. So I'm totally biased. I probably should have said something different, but I guess that's what this game is for.
There you go. They're fun people. Rapid fire question number two. What is your favorite social media platform?
Instagram. Should I have said Threads though? But a millennial.
Well, they're kind of one and the same at this point, aren't they?
I know. I'm like the TikTok. Like I want to read it a physical newspaper at the end of the day. I don't know.
How are you finding Threads, by the way? Are you using it? Or you like it?
You know, I think, yeah, I've played around with it. I don't actively use it, but yeah, I think we'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah. I'm kind of ambivalent about it. I had this thought early on and it seems to be playing out. We'll see if it's playing out by the time our episode here airs, that it needs to offer something. It doesn't quite offer something yet. It can't be. It's great that it's okay. Seems to be absent of the toxicity of that Twitter had, but it can't just be that. It's got to be something unique. Mm. So we'll see how it plays out. But this is not about me. This is all about you. Rapid fire question number three: coffee or alcohol?
Coffee.
All right. Where are you getting your coffee? Now you're in New York, so you have plenty of small mom and pops to choose from. Are you going to one of those? Or are you going to a big chain?
Oh no, always small. Ninth, if a friend of mine just opened up a coffee shop in the East Village called Thayer. So if you're close by, highly recommend.
Sounds good. Rapid fire question number four: what's your favorite on the run food? You're in New York. I mean, come on.
I mean, the deli sandwich.
Yes. Yes. Great pull. I love that.
Got to.
All right, Caitlin, rapid fire question number five. What do you want to be after you finish this career?
Well slept.
I think that's our dream as PR people, right? That's all we want.
Totally. Oh, all stuff. We want.
Caitlin, yep. This has been a great conversation. Please let people know how they can find you and Scout Lab online.
Yep. You can find us at scoutlab.com or you can find me on the internet, caitlin@scoutlab.com. Feel free to shoot me a note. I always love to chat.
Sounds good. Thanks again, Caitlin. And thank you everyone for listening. Please remember to subscribe to the show. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok @ThePRPodcast and send us a question or a comment. Our intro is by Christopher Appel. You can find him and his fantastic photography on Instagram @Christopher_APPOLDT. Check him out there and hire him for all your photography needs. You can find me online @JodyFisher on all the socials and on the web @JodyFisherPR.com. We'll see you next time on the PR Podcast.